supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. The science of genetics, it expands daily, offering new hope, and with that, new complexities. This is especially true with genetic testing, which hopes to identify disease early enough to make treatment more effective. But what do these tests really mean to families? How do families deal with the results, and who has access to the information? On today's show, we'll discuss genetic testing, what it means, and how we can deal with the results. Later on in the show, we'll explore the issue of hope and genetic research with Dr. Jerome Groopman. But first, one of the hundreds of genetic tests available today is called BRCA, or BRCA, and it tests for gene mutations linked to a very aggressive form of breast and ovarian cancer. Mike and Scott met with a woman who we'll call Sandy. In 2004, she was diagnosed with breast cancer at a fairly early age. Because her mother and grandmother had breast cancer, and as did a male relative, the doctors asked her to get the BRCA test. Mike and spoke to Sandy, her husband, and one of her sons. She asked Sandy when she began to think about a genetic link to the incidence of breast cancer in her family.
You know, I really didn't think very much about it being a genetic issue. My sister was much more concerned than I was. I've always been pretty easygoing and not much of a worrier. And my sister, before I was even tested, suspected this and talked about having preventative bilateral mastectomies. And I thought, oh, you are so, you know, that was astonishing to me. I would never consider such a thing.
As you went into the genetic testing, what kind of preparation were you given? Did somebody sit down with you and say, here's what we're going to do, here's what this might mean?
Yeah, they did tell me that the pros of this were that I would be eligible for preventative surgeries and preventative medications and just, you know, a lot more prepared.
Did you have somebody who was counseling you on how to receive the information once you got it? I mean, I can only imagine the anxiety one has to feel going into a test like that.
To tell you the truth, I have had so many tests that came back everything's okay that I didn't really expect it to come back positive. And when I went in and they gave me the paper, they just gave me the paper and said, read it. And I read the top, and it said the test was positive. I was so shocked. I said, I need a minute. I got up, and I walked around the building, and I started to cry. And I was just in shock. And then I came back and talked to him. But after that, I went through a lot of anxiety, a lot of anger. My husband was so awesome. He helped me, you know, I didn't want to take out my anger on people, so I went out in the garage and pounded nails into boards as hard as I could. That kind of got rid of some of it. I'm not usually an angry person, but I was angry. And then I went through a mastectomy of the affected side and a preventative mastectomy on the right side, and, you know, all my female organs taken out. Because I have this BRCA2 mutation, you have a much higher chance of getting cancer, and a second cancer, which is something that did happen to my mother. She ended up dying just this past April of a second cancer in her other breast. The thing that I feel the worst about is that my two sons each have a 50-50 chance of having this mutation, which makes them at higher risk for male breast cancer and prostate cancer, and some of, you know, they might have it too. And if they do, they can pass it on to their own children.
You have a brother and a sister. What did they end up doing as a result of your test?
My sister got tested. Actually, she got tested before I did. And she was negative. And my brother has three children. One of them's a daughter. And for reasons that I haven't discussed with him, he hasn't been tested yet.
How do you remember that time as that time around the test?
Very anxious on my part. We waited, and I couldn't believe how strong she was with being so positive and knowing that what could come out of the results of this. So it was a very anxious time on my part. I tried to be positive, but inside it was scary. And we just did this thing together, and you know, today everything is fine. And you know, I feel a lot of good things came out of this too. We're much closer as a married couple, and our family is closer. We communicate more. We tell our feelings more. Just our relationship has just been strengthened, and you know, she's my hero. She's my hero.
There are people who, in situations like this, would rather not know. Did you ever have a time where you felt, I just don't want to know, I don't want to go through this test, I just want to forget about the chemo and all that horror for a while?
No. As soon as I found out, I wanted that stuff out of me as quickly as possible. And I just had a whole new attitude about mastectomy. I just wanted it gone. And I really, 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 really want to live, and I wanted to do everything I could, everything that was possible to live, and I was willing to do anything.
You have two sons. Mm-hmm. How did you talk to them about all of this? Did you tell them you were going to get the test, or were you going to do that and then discuss it later? How did that happen?
I'm sorry, I don't remember.
I wasn't aware of the test before. She told me about 4 weeks ago I got tested for a genetic disorder, a genetic defect called BRCA2, and it turned out that I am positive for it. What that means for you is, she went down the list about all the percentages and all that stuff, and she really, you know, she was my teacher once she understood all the consequences and results.
Are you thinking about getting a test, or?
I mean, while it would be helpful, I'm sure. Like, while it would be helpful, and I could, you know, go through some steps in order to prevent it, I just would rather live my life. I think it's kind of like if you believe in destiny or not. You know, I'd rather not know about what's going to happen to me. I would rather live each day, you know, day by day. If something does happen, then it happens, and at least I won't be going through my life thinking that something is not right in me or something like that, or not normal. That's just the way I was born, and I'm still happy with the way I was born. I am who I am.
Some families where there's a genetic disorder, there's a lot of guilt that people feel, even though there's nothing they could have done about this disorder. They feel terrible for passing it on to their children. How did you and your mother talk about this, and how do you feel about the possibility of passing this on to your children?
Well, mainly I feel that, you know, it's something that happened to us that is not my fault. I do feel guilty. You know, I will feel very guilty if anything happens to them, if they end up having it. But I know that, you know, I would never ever want to do anything, you know, on purpose to them, and I never felt any bad feeling toward my mother about, I mean, she was devastated. She never got tested, but the genetic testing proved that she definitely had the mutation.
It's really sad that she feels like that to me. I mean, it's sad because we've had a lot of, you know, late night conversations, and where she cries and she just says, "I'm sorry, you know, I'm really sorry for doing it to you." And this is all the while she could have been you know, she could have died or something from her breast cancer, and I'm so happy to have her here, and, you know, I'm just overwhelmed with the fact that she could feel sorry for something when I'm just overjoyed that she made it through so much and she's here with me, you know. I would never hold anything against her, and I just can't really understand that part myself, but maybe if I have kids or something, maybe I would understand a little more.
That was Mike and Scott speaking with a woman we've called Sandy. She spoke with Sandy, her husband, and her son following Sandy's positive diagnosis of the breast cancer gene. Well, joining us now is Barbara Bernhardt. She's a board-certified genetic counselor and clinical associate professor of medicine at the University of Pennsylvania. She provides genetic counseling to adults with or at risk for genetic disorders. Barbara, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dan. I'm happy to be here.
And if you want to join our conversation, our number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. We're talking about genetic testing, what the implications are, how to make the decision whether or not to have it. 888-477-9499. Barbara, that interview ran 8 minutes and 33 seconds, and we could probably talk for the next 3 hours about all the issues.
We certainly could.
That came out. The first thing that strikes me was the way she found the results out of the test. She was handed a paper, and it said positive. Please tell me that's unusual.
I believe it perhaps is unusual. I think we as genetic counselors often have a great deal of trouble trying to figure out the best way to give people what we think will be bad news. That may have been the way that counselor chose to do it. It may be that she wanted Sandy to have some time to read it and contemplate and be able to be by herself, with herself, for a moment. Sometimes genetic counselors may believe it's actually harder to hear those words, that you've tested positive for this gene change. I don't know why it happened like that. I would hope that the counselor was able to provide a lot of support as Sandy began to accept the fact that she indeed had tested positive for this gene mutation.
We're going to spend a lot more time talking about the emotions that come
sure.
out. I mean, we heard about anger and we heard about guilt. In this particular case, her guilt, which is not rational but understandable, mm-hmm. her son met that guilt with gratitude.
Sure.
But I would imagine that's not universal. Depending on the child, they could meet that guilt with anger.
Occasionally they do. In my experience, it happens more often as it did with Sandy. Children end up providing a tremendous amount of support and reassurance to their parents. We do have some people who are angry at the idea that they have been passed on something bad by their parents. Oftentimes there's trouble in the relationship between the parent and child in other realms, and it's not simply the genetic test result that suddenly precipitates anger that wasn't there before.
There's a quality, I can't quite capture it, of shame or secretiveness. I can't quite catch the label, but we heard it with Sandy, whose brother chose not to take the test, which that I understand, but then she never talked to him about it. And that's a theme that runs through here.
Yeah, there is some people feel self-stigmatized, I guess might be a word, by feeling as though they are carrying something that's part of themselves that may cause bad things to happen or may cause other people to look at them in some negative way. So we do find people that feel stigmatized by genes that they carry.
Well, in fact, are they?
Are they stigmatized?
Yes.
I think that there's some evidence, indeed, that they are. They may be stigmatized in relationships, for example. There's concern about a different kind of stigma in terms of discrimination, genetic discrimination.
Yeah.
Go ahead, sorry.
I'm going to interrupt you because we've got Monica on the line, and I want to bring Marcia, sorry, and I want to bring her into the conversation, because I think she's raising a question about just about stigma. Marcia?
Hi.
Hi.
My question is...
Yes?
I'm sorry. My question is the concern of medical insurance when one finds out this type of information.
Yeah, that addresses the issue of stigma. Has that happened to you or a loved one, Marcia?
I'm a breast cancer survivor myself and have considered testing, particularly because I have a grown daughter.
Okay.
But, you know, I've had several different medical professionals tell me differing answers to my question.
Well, let's hear what a genetic counselor will say.
Right. There's very commonly a concern about this. This is what we would label genetic discrimination. People are concerned that they may lose their health insurance, may have difficulty obtaining health insurance, or may have certain conditions placed on their insurance. In fact, there's been very few cases of outright genetic discrimination that we're aware of in the country, but nonetheless, I think the concern of the public is very, very high. There is a bill that we hope will be passed through the Senate this year that will prohibit genetic discrimination, that will prohibit health insurers from discriminating against people based on gene mutations that they carry. We also tell breast cancer survivors like you that there probably is very little concern for additional discrimination that you may experience. Unfortunately, people who have themselves survived breast cancer may have troubles with health insurance simply because of their cancer diagnosis. We have little evidence that a genetic diagnosis would add to that.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I wish the answer was better, but
well, that's at least a help.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Thank you.
When we talk about genes, there's a point I want to bring up. I spoke with a doctor about this, and you know, he reinforced the belief that even with genetics, biology is not destiny, and even genes can change, that genes evolve.
Yes, and I think biology not being destiny is most important from the perspective of the interaction of our environment and our behaviors actually with the genes that we carry. So even if you look at a woman who carries a BRCA mutation, not all of them are going to develop breast cancer. Only somewhere between 60 and 85% of them will, depending on the gene that's involved. So there are certainly other factors at play besides genes that are going to determine whether or not we get a condition.
Such as, do we know?
Well, with the case of breast cancer, we know that hormones play a role. There's some evidence that things like alcohol and exercise also play a role. So there are some things that we may have some control over. We don't have control over our genes, of course.
Right, but we can mitigate the chances. When you say alcohol and exercise, I assume you mean less alcohol, more exercise.
That's correct.
I can just want to be sure about this.
Yes. Yes.
Is there any other thing that research is pointing to that we can do to help mitigate the risk?
With regard to breast cancer, mm-hmm. You're speaking of, there's been a lot of studies that have looked at diet, exercise, smoking probably is not a big factor. No, there's probably more negatives than there are positives. These other additional risk factors are very, very difficult to tease out, particularly in families where there's a mutation, because we just haven't been studying these families for very long.
Hmm. All right. Well, let's take a short break and come back and talk about the psychological implications of having these tests and
certainly
finding out one way or the other, whether they're positive or negative. We're talking about genetic testing today on Voices in the Family. What are the implications? What's it mean? What are the fears, issues of discrimination? And how do we communicate news like this to our children? My guest is Barbara Bernhard. She's a board-certified genetic counselor and clinical associate professor of medicine at University of Pennsylvania. She served on numerous local and national committees consulting on ethical, legal, and social implications of the Human Genome Project. Our number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. That's right here on WHYY 91 FM.
Support for WHYY comes from Westtown School. Education should make you think about four essential things: who I am, how I see the world, how I want to live, and what I can give back. Since 1799, Westtown has been educating students to help achieve these essentials. Westtown School, located on 600 acres near Westchester, will hold a pre-K through 12th grade open house on Saturday, November 10th at 10 a.m. Details at westtown.edu.
Stem cell research, genetic testing, genetic engineering, these terms have become familiar to us as the science of genetics and DNA advances. But do we know what they really mean to our lives and our future? Join WHYY for a conversation on DNA and genetics. This free event is moderated by John Hockenberry, host of the award-winning series The DNA Files, Wednesday evening, November 7th at 6:30 at WHYY. To RSVP, please visit whyy.org.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking with Barbara Bernhardt. She's a genetic counselor and clinical associate professor of medicine at Penn. And we're talking about genetics, genetic testing and counseling. What are the implications of having these tests? What do they mean? What does it mean when we choose not to have these tests? Our number, 888-477-9499. Barbara, we were talking during the break about whether there's any specific genes that if you have that gene, you will get that disease.
Yeah, there are several where you can essentially guarantee that somebody who carries a gene mutation is going to develop the disorder. Huntington's disease, which is a neurologic disorder with its onset in middle age, is such an example of that. There are also a number of genetic disorders where the variability is so great that somebody can have a disorder in a very mild form, such that it really almost escapes medical diagnosis, but it could be passed on, and a child, for example, could be more severely affected. So it can happen both ways, either a mild manifestation of a disease, or actually there could be certainty of developing something.
And all the others, what we're learning is just risk factors.
Usually many of the tests that are available for disorders like the cancer syndromes do predict a probability of developing a disorder rather than a certainty.
And you can find other kinds of cancers through genetic testing, not just BRCA?
Yes, there's genetic testing for hereditary colon cancer. There's new genetic testing for things like melanoma. There's going to be a number of other genetic tests coming down the pike for various forms of cancer.
Well, let me ask you, and I'll tell you why I'm narrowing on this one. What are the genetic risks for melanoma?
Well, sun exposure, of course, is the main that's an environmental risk, excuse me. There is a single gene that is known to be a strong risk factor for melanoma in a minority of melanoma families. There's going to be many other genes out there that we have yet to discover for melanoma.
Yeah, I'm sure for lots of things, too, not just melanoma. I want to come back to Huntington's disease because I had an experience with that. Many years ago, we did a show on a similar topic, and my guests, if memory serves me correctly, and it rarely does, it was Arlo Guthrie's daughters were on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Huntington disease, Woody Guthrie, is Arlo's grandfather, died of that. So these women spearheaded the genetic research into mm-hmm. Huntington's disease.
Yeah.
They were instrumental in helping find the gene. One of them never got tested. So I said to her, why? And she said, because I live my life anyway as though each day is precious, as though tomorrow's not guaranteed. So why would I want to get this test? And then have the sword of Damocles over my head. So what's your reaction?
Yeah, I would say that she sits with the majority of people from Huntington's disease families who choose not to be tested to find out if they're going to develop a fatal disorder that is incurable, for which there is no treatment. I think as soon as we have any treatment to offer, there'll be a lot more people interested in that test. But the fact that there's no treatment, no cure, and that it's devastating, people simply choose not to know and hold on to hope that they may, in fact, be unaffected.
What about passing it on?
Well, a lot of people decide to have children despite the fact that they may have this disorder. That, of course, is their choice, they may do that.
Hmm. Let's go back to the phones. We've got John on the line. John,
hello?
Hi.
Hello?
Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
I'm wondering if I might be able to go in the opposite direction, that I'm a male in my 50s, and I have a number of physical abnormalities that I've lived with all my life, i.e. I have an abnormal skin condition all over my body. I am blind. I have osteoporosis, which is a bit unique for a male. I understand that doesn't happen all that often. And I'm also very short and a bit on the scrawny side. I come from a family on both sides of my parents of males who were 6 feet or above. And I'm just wondering if genetic testing, even though it won't improve my condition, it might help me to know what went wrong and why. It would just, psychologically, it would give me a breather.
Well, how?
Pardon me?
How?
You know, I just wondered, you know, why was I born this way? You know, what caused it? And, you know, you can get into theological discussions and psychological discussions, but it would be helpful to me to know, on a biological level, what went wrong, because a lot of things went wrong that I've had to live with all my life.
So what would happen if you were tested, John, and you found out, I'm not going to say this elegantly, that your genes weren't from Tiffany's? What would that mean?
It would emotionally? It would mean that I find it difficult to explain it, but it would just give me the knowledge of, look, this is what went wrong. And even though, you know, what went wrong can't be changed, that it would be a benefit to me to know why.
And one last question, and I'll stop annoying you, I promise.
No, that's all right. You're not annoying me at all.
Okay. Well, don't give up hope. So one last question on the other side of it. So what does it mean to you without that information?
It's a great big question mark that I've lived with forever, and I would just like it answered.
Okay, let's let Barbara react to it. Thanks so much for your call. We're gonna have to ask you to hang up because our connection's so bad, and you'll take the answer off the air. Take care, John.
Yeah, I think John's search for certainty is a very common one. I think we want to have answers to know why we are the way we are. John, I think, could benefit from an evaluation by a clinical geneticist who's used to getting histories from people and examining people with the question in their minds, could this disorder that I'm looking at have a genetic basis? And then we can think about what kind of genetic testing might be available. But it's possible that John actually could get a name placed to his condition, and sometimes that's helpful. It may be it may mean that he could be part of a genetic support group, for example. There may be other people out there who have an identical disorder who may be advocating for research, for example.
Boy, doesn't that mean everything.
It does.
To join a group with kindred spirits where you don't have to feel so damn alone with what you're living with.
Tremendous support.
It means everything. Tell me, when people come to you for testing, what are some of the reasons?
Well, it depends really on what kind of a genetic counselor you are. I work in an adult genetics clinic, so most of the people that I see either have a genetic disorder or think they may have a genetic disorder because of something that's in their family. So people are coming to me for diagnostic genetic testing or to test to see if they may develop something in the future. Other people go to genetic counselors when they're contemplating having children, and there may be some risk for having a child with a certain kind of a genetic condition, and they may be asking about genetic testing at that point in time.
Let's take a minute and talk about that, about genetic testing when someone is thinking about mm-hmm. having children, or someone who's already pregnant. There's a big discussion now about designer babies, and we are getting the skills to have designer babies. How do we mitigate the risk? What's your role as a counselor?
Well, I think, and I'll use this word, fortunately, we're a ways away from being able to test for designer babies. There's very few traits at this point that we can test for. Genetic testing is really done at this point in time to test for medical conditions that carry some morbidity or increased mortality or a risk of disability.
Well, let me stop you there. You used a magic word.
I used the word disability.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
I wished I hadn't.
Well, I'm thrilled you did, because I would have taken you there anyway. As most of my listeners know, I'm a quadriplegic. So how does a counselor weigh in, or should a counselor weigh in, knowing that there's always bias? For example, if I was a genetic counselor, I would see the world differently. A woman said to me that she was afraid that she was at risk for having a child with Down syndrome. Well, that's going to mean something different to her than it does to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know many people who've had children with Down syndrome who were thrilled.
Right. Well, as genetic counselors, we are trained to present information in an unbiased fashion. So when we talk about Down syndrome, we want to talk about, yes, it is associated with some degree of mental retardation, some physical problems, and some increased risk for some medical disorders. On the other hand, it's important that we point out to families, to count people we are seeing for counseling, that most families who have a child with Down syndrome have grown through the experience, love their child, enjoy their child. The siblings of the child with Down syndrome have benefited tremendously from the experience of Down syndrome. People with Down syndrome contribute to society, are employed, go to school, have friends. So we want to make sure that people understand the good things and the bad things about having a child with Down syndrome. It's also important for us as genetic counselors to explore with families their thoughts about having a child with a difference, and how they would cope with that, how they would benefit from it, and what they would do about it.
And knowing, there's research, Stumbling on Happiness, Dan Gilbert, in his wonderful book, Stumbling on Happiness, He cites an awful lot of research about our ability to predict what will cause us to suffer and what will bring us happiness. And the bottom line of all this research is we really suck at it.
Mm-hmm.
We've got no skills at predicting what will make us miserable.
Yes. Well, fortunately, most people rise to the occasion.
Yeah, they do. They do. I want to quote something that came out of the interview we heard in the very beginning of the show. It was Sandy's husband, and for those who didn't hear the interview, Sandy was diagnosed with the BRCA gene, which puts her at risk for breast and ovarian cancer. So she was diagnosed, and her husband said something. He said, "Good came out of this too." He didn't elaborate. Could you?
Yeah, we do see this happening, where sometimes the diagnosis of a genetic disorder in a family that has implications for other people in the family opens up whole new lines of communication in the family, and a new openness and a new acceptance in the family. So this is not at all uncommon. One of the things we do in genetic counseling is discuss with with our clients how they're going to talk to their relatives about having had a genetic test and about their test result and how this information is apt to diffuse through families. But there oftentimes is a strengthening in the family after something genetic is discovered. Just one of the other wonderful things I think about the strength of families.
I have learned a great deal in my life, as I'm sure you have, about life, about the human spirit, about what it means, about what's important and what's not. I've learned a lot of those things, and I have learned none of them through my accomplishments and achievements and acquisitions. I have learned all of them through adversity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and most people will say that who live through it, that there's been wisdom
mm-hmm.
at the other side of adversity. Not that they'd recommend it for others, but, you know, we learn when the candle flickers, we learn how important the flame is.
Yes.
And sometimes we need the candle to flicker to
I would agree.
To know that. We're talking about genetic testing here on Voices in the Family, what it means, what the implications are, how positive results or negative results can really help us take a different look at our life and our loved ones. I'm talking with Barbara Bernhardt. She's a board-certified genetic counselor, and she's a clinical associate professor of medicine at the University of Pennsylvania. Our number, 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. If you've been through genetic testing or a loved one has, or if you're considering it, give us a call. We're going to take a short break now. When we come back, we're going to hear from an interview I did recently with Dr. Jerome Groopman about hope, hopelessness, and healing when it comes to genetic testing. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. That's right here on WHYY 91 FM.
Penn's Medical Center supports WHYY. Doctors at Penn's Depression Research Unit are providing evaluations to determine if you are suffering from depression. Symptoms may include mood swings, irritability, sleep disturbance, and lack of interest. Those who qualify for a research study may receive an initial examination and an investigational antidepressant for 3 to 15 months. For information, the DRU number at Penn is 215-662-3462.
Next time on Day to Day, are racial tensions in Los Angeles a laughing matter?
I came out here, you know, you have blacks, whites, Mexicans.
This audience thinks so, and so does this anthropologist.
We get a lot of blacks, whites, and Latinos enjoying comedy together, and it gives us permission to identify and laugh at some of those things.
Bridging cultures with comedy, next time on Day to Day.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Welcome back to Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. Genetic research has made many advances in the past decade, and with each breakthrough, there's hope for families affected by the disease. But how does this hope really affect their lives? Is it real hope for treatment and diminished suffering, or is it hope for a distant future? Earlier, I spoke with Dr. Jerome Groopman, an oncologist and author of many books, among them, The Anatomy of Hope. These days, it seems we're having genetic breakthroughs almost every day. And when we get tested for a genetic disease, some people could view it as a death sentence or the inevitability, and some people can feel hope for the future. What's reasonable? What's realistic? And one can alter the quality of one's life.
Well, in a way, it distinguishes between, you know, what is loosely called true hope and false hope. True hope is very clear-eyed and takes into account what is likely, what is not likely, and what are all the barriers. False hope, in a way, is sort of, you know, chasing a rainbow, thinking that you can grab hold of it, but in fact, it's really just a perception or an illusion. So I think that in each individual case, a person needs to either him or herself, or with friends or family, or with a therapist, or whoever can get them to look in as clear-eyed a way as possible to say, there are risks, it's never perfect, but you really should take action on this, because the hope that a cure or an absolute remedy will come in the near future is remote.
Jerry, you're an oncologist, and a lot of your work is done in the laboratory.
Yes, absolutely.
So you're working on altering people's lives, saving people's lives. I wonder what impact that has on you when you think about the implications of what you're doing.
Well, it first rejuvenates me, because when I care for patients who have diseases for which medicine still has very little in terms of cure, it's very difficult. And by going back to the laboratory and trying to make progress and trying to change that harsh reality on a personal level sustains your spirit. It also helps you in terms of generating ideas, because you really both think about problems when you're with patients in terms of what kinds of knowledge are needed to advance towards a better treatment. And then you go back to the laboratory and say, okay, this is the direction I'm going to take, which is informed in part through your clinical work.
Do you ever feel just terribly burdened, wishing you could do something you just can't do?
Very often. You know, I just recently was speaking to a wonderful woman who's become a friend, who 2 years after the discovery of her breast cancer and 2 years after the initial treatment, when everything seemed to be gone, you know, now has a relapse. And currently there are treatments that can keep the disease at bay, but we don't have anything sufficiently potent to completely eradicate it, to say, I can offer you a cure. And that is very, very hard, living with that uncertainty. You don't give up hope, but on the other hand, realistically, a person needs to know what he or she can expect.
And for her, and for anyone in her position, what does hope mean?
Well, I think hope is very important in terms of true hope, to make the best decisions you can make in the face of uncertainty, so that you are informed where things stand now, but also life decisions, how he or she wants to live the time that may remain.
Which is where I weigh in as a psychologist. And when I think about hope in that situation, I'm not thinking about a disease process. I'm thinking about there is hope that this person or any of us can have in our lives love, pleasure, surrounded with people we care about, and we can have hope to experience the things in life that are the most precious to us, maybe not for as long as we'd like, but we can experience what's precious.
That dimension is so critical, is truly paramount in many ways, and in the modern medical system is often ignored or given short shrift. Because ultimately, for all of us, you know, we're all going to reach a point where we don't have a cure. That's the nature of life. We don't live forever. But that space, that dimension, is so key in terms of living life in a full way.
So, to come back to what we were originally talking about, if you had a genetic disease in your family, would you want to be tested?
I think it would depend on the nature of the disease. For example, my grandfather, who I just adored and was a real character, really just a feisty, funny person filled with energy in life, developed Alzheimer's disease and deteriorated, and the change in his character was awful, before he became withdrawn and blank. He became aggressive and mean, which was totally contrary to anything that he had ever exhibited before. There's nothing you can do right now about Alzheimer's. So would I want to imagine that in, I don't know, 20 years, I'm in my late 50s now, that's the way my life will be? What benefit is that information to me? The answer is no. unless I were in a scientific study and wanted to be a guinea pig in some way. But if I had, for example, BRCA, like you were talking earlier, and I knew that that predisposed me to certain cancers, and that I might be monitored more carefully or even take a radical intervention like surgery, then I would think about it more seriously because there are consequences, therapeutic consequences, to the knowledge.
Jerome Groopman is Chief of Experimental Medicine at the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. He's written several books, among them The Anatomy of Hope. I'm here with Barbara Bernhardt. She's a genetic counselor and clinical associate professor of medicine at the University of Pennsylvania. I've got to be honest with you, Barbara. As Jerome Groopman was talking, I was riveted on your face. There was this kind of deep, gentle knowing as you were listening. What was your reaction to what you heard? What was happening over there?
Well, a lot of what Dr. Groopman was saying really resonated with me in terms of hope and the importance of hope in people's lives. We deal with this all the time, and one of the things I hear from families in their interactions with many physicians is that the physicians have taken away all hope. I think that one of the things we like to do is try to give people back some hope, which we know is extremely important for them living their lives. So I was agreeing with him.
My mother used to tell me when I was little that as long as you have your health, you have your happiness. You know what? She was wrong. You don't need your health to have your happiness. I've learned she was wrong about a couple other things too, but she was right about most things. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Brenda on the line. Brenda?
Yes. Hello, Dr. Gottlieb. I appreciate you taking my call.
Sure.
In 2004, I had lost my sister at the age of 46 to ovarian cancer, and 4 months later, my father followed with prostate cancer. He had died from that. So I had pursued genetic counseling, and it was very hard at that time to actually find anyone that would, you know, do genetic testing on me, because it really wasn't that popular, but I did seek it out in Philadelphia. I went through the genetic process, and I was diagnosed with the BRCA1. I also have another sister at the age of 36 that had a stage 1 ovarian, and she's a survivor. What I decided to do, because I was very heavily screened, I was in a lot of clinical studies with the cancer center that I had gone to, and I decided to have prophylactic surgery, a hysterectomy, to prevent any type of cancer, knowing that I had the BRCA1. When they had gone in and done my surgery, I was a stage 3 cancer. So I, you know, essentially feel like I owe my life to the genetic testing that I had done, because if they wouldn't have, you know, detected the genetic alteration, I wouldn't have had the hysterectomy, and therefore I wouldn't have known about the cancer.
Well, that's an amazing story, Barbara.
Yeah, that's one of the sad things about ovarian cancer, and that it's very difficult to screen for and catch at an early stage. So I'm glad that you were so fortunate and that you're doing well now, I assume.
Brenda had to hang up.
Oh, sorry.
Thanks so much for your call, Brenda. I just want to ask you a couple of real quick, concrete questions before we talk about the counseling process. And these are from some of the callers who I see. Is there testing for advanced vascular dementia? Do we have that skill yet?
I would have to punt on that one. I'm not sure I know what advanced vascular dementia is. I would have to go read about it. I'm guessing the answer is no, but I don't know for sure.
And can genetic disorders be affected by diet?
The manifestation of some genetic disorders can be affected by diet. It depends on what kind of genetic disorder you're talking about. There's a number of disorders that are screened for in newborns that are highly affected by diet, things like PKU. The effects of PKU can be completely eliminated by putting an infant on an appropriate diet and maintaining that diet through life.
I want to talk about the process of counseling in a couple of minutes we have left. I know in my kind of counseling, everything turns on the relationship between the counselor and the client. Yours too?
Well, I wish that were true. We unfortunately don't have the luxury of being able to see people over time, so oftentimes we see a client only once. It's difficult to establish a relationship and rapport in that period of time, so we try to do sort of speed rapport building and trying to establish some rapport in the first 10 minutes, getting to know the person, what their questions and concerns are. But I think the relationship is perhaps not as important as it is in your kind of counseling.
Well, I also want to say you practice what you teach, because when we met in the lobby at WHYY Studios, I saw you made powerful eye contact and you were fully present. By the time we got here in this studio talking, well, I could talk with this woman about anything.
Oh, well, thank you.
And, you know, that wasn't over the course of a long time. I want to thank you so much.
Thank you, Dan.
For joining us.
I enjoyed it.
It was an important show and important information. Barbara Bernhardt is a board-certified genetic counselor. She's a clinical associate professor of medicine at Penn. Today's program was made possible with support from the DNA Files, a project of Sound Vision Productions. You can get more information at dnafiles.org. On Wednesday, November 7th, WHYY will host a town meeting and panel discussion to talk about DNA and genetics and what they mean to us. Please join the event beginning at 5:30. For more information, visit us at whyy.org. Well, if you've got a question, comment, show idea, we'd love to hear from you. We are at voices@whyy.org. And you can reach me at drdangottlieb.com. You can listen to archive edition of Voices in the Family on our website, and that's whyy.org/voices. Well, the engineer for today's show has been Al Banks. Christine Dempsey is our executive producer. Elisa Walters is our associate producer. Voices in the Family is produced by Mike and Scott. Me? I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. Enjoy your week, my friends.
Day-to-day.